Listener Production.
Coming up on Footy Talk, Tasmania is the talk of the town. We talk about whether the North and the South are going to get it together. Are we seeing a new breed of stars bursting through the competition? Big game for Collingwood on Thursday night and mid-season signings ahead of next season. That is all on the agenda on Footy Talk. Great to have you with us for Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk. We do it a little differently on a Wednesday. We look at the footy world from a player's point of view, and we also give you an insight to be behind the headlines, hopefully not too often, and what that's like from a player and a club point of view. I'm Jack Heverin. Elite athletes alongside me, of course, David Zaharakis and Abby Holmes. Good to see both of you.
Great to see you, Hev, on the eve of round two. Cannot wait. There are some crucial games coming up early in the season, I know, but the Pies and the Saints tomorrow night, I cannot wait to see that one. Two teams that are still hunting their first win of the season.
Zaka, what's the game you're most looking forward to this weekend?
I'm actually most looking forward to, a bit of bias here, obviously Saturday night at the SCG, seeing how the boys come off a good win against Hawthorn on the weekend, but the few injuries they've got, the Bombers, especially in the back line, so I'm feeling they're a little bit vulnerable, and the Swans are obviously in top form at the moment. So I want to see them bounce back, not bounce back, but I want to see them having two good weeks in a row.
I just want to get this out there before we dive into a couple of the issues as well. I've never felt more inadequate in my entire life than what I feel right now, because you two elite athletes who have taken retirement, well, better than most. Some people really blow out in retirement. You two have gone the other way, and you're arguably fitter than what you've ever been. Zaka, what are you training for at the moment?
I've got an Ironman this Sunday in Geelong. Yeah, with the Grand Prix. It's the same day as the Grand Prix, which I'm not that happy about. But yeah, got a half Ironman down in Geelong and yeah, just training every day for triathlons and Ironmans. It's going well.
I would be a good friend and go and watch him. But as he said, the same day as the Grand Prix. So if I had to pick, I'm sorry, Zaka. I'm picking Albert Park Track.
Someone from the AFL needs to look at fixturing and talk to the AusGP for next season, please. Yeah, talk to AusGP, AFL, and also Ironman Oceania.
They all need to get together
and just put it together.
On that, that's where I want to start, because okay. I've got an observation, and I think there might be a missed opportunity for the AFL in the way that they've fixtured round two. Thousands of people are descending on Victoria, coming to Melbourne for the Grand Prix, not just from around Australia, but around the world, right? There is not a night game in Melbourne on Friday and Saturday night. Friday, of course, up in Adelaide, and Saturday night's in Sydney. So I've heard by a number of people the last few days that said we would have loved to have come to Melbourne, gone to the race or the track during the day, yes, but then potentially gone and caught a game in Melbourne. We love our footy. We don't get the opportunity to come to Victoria often, but there is not a night game at Marvel nor the MCG. So is that a missed opportunity?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to go regardless. But when you think about how many extra people are in town for this weekend, I hadn't thought of that, and I'm guessing the AFL hadn't thought of that either.
No, well, there's a 4:35 bounce, but that's right in the middle of qualifying, isn't it, on the Saturday?
Yep.
So people don't have the option of going to both. They've got to pick one or the other. And so for everybody coming to Melbourne for the GP, they're gonna be at the track.
Well, it's also a missed opportunity to bring new fans into the sport. So people look at Melbourne, they might be flying in from international around the world, and they might be moving to Australia in a couple of years, you never know. And all of a sudden they see what's on in Melbourne. Saturday night, there's this big stadium with the MCG in the middle of Melbourne. I'm going to the Grand Prix during the day. I want to do something at night. They go to this new sport, massive game at the MCG. The other thing is too, Sunday, you talk about qualifying on Saturday. Sunday there's a game at 4 o'clock at the MCG, Richmond Port. Why don't you push that back till 6 o'clock or 5:30 on a Sunday afternoon, so then people can go to the Grand Prix at 3, leave after the race and go straight to the footy. So it's a massive missed opportunity, I believe.
Well, there's a bit of bias here as well, but the NBL have moved game 3 of the championship series back to 5:30 for the exact same reasons. That would have normally been probably a 2:30, a 3 o'clock tip off, but back to 5:30, and I think you'll find by Sunday that'll be a sellout as a result, which is great.
Awesome.
Let's talk about Tassie. They are the biggest story of the week so far since Monday night, no doubt about that. Zaka, I think people are still wondering how the North and the South are going to get together here. And are they going to get together?
It's a very interesting one here. Hobart and Lonnie obviously have a massive rivalry. If you're from the North, you don't like the South, obviously vice versa. I'm just wondering, obviously they've got 100,000 foundational members plus, but 120 now.
Wowzers.
The pricing of the tickets might be a bit low, and that might be why. But I just want to know, when it comes to game time and the team is in the competition, it's the only team in the AFL right now that's named after a state. So you can tell the AFL are trying to bring together the whole state. It's not named after a city, but are people from Lonnie going to come down to Hobart to watch the game? Is there going to be any games in Launceston? Obviously, the stadium's going to be in Hobart, we believe. I just think what role are players going to play in this to try and bring together the state? Because I do have a feeling that people from Launceston aren't going to really embrace the whole thing, or I've got questions around it. So I'm just going to put it to you. What do you guys think on this?
Well, it will be interesting as well if they do share it around and play some games in Launceston. As you said, AFL footy does hit the town quite often throughout the year. So it would be good to bring in a Tassie team in 28, yes, but not just have the new shiny stadium as their home ground. They really need to share it around the state itself. But as you said, it's going to be very, very interesting. Can the people of Tasmania put their rivalry apart based on the north and the south, and can they come together to celebrate the inclusion of this Tasmanian Devil side into the AFL? It's going to be a very interesting watch.
I mean, they haven't got this far yet because they're still trying to work out whether there's going to be a stadium in Hobart in the first place. But when they eventually get to the point of fixturing, you would think that there'll be, say, a 9-3 split or something, won't there, between Hobart and Launceston? Surely.
Launceston obviously gets a lot of footy now with Hawthorn playing there a lot. How's that going to get affected? Yeah, Launceston can't just go from having 4 or 5 games, 6 games a year to then nothing because they're all in Hobart. So that deprives the people up there of footy. So that fixturing will be very interesting.
On the weekend, I sort of got drawn to the stars of the competition, and not the stars that you normally think. Like I did Richmond Carlton on Thursday. Obviously, you're always drawn to Charlie Curnow and to Dustin Martin. And I was at Giants Stadium on, NG Stadium on Saturday, the world famous NG Stadium for the Giants and North Melbourne. And the Giants have got a whole roster full of talent. But I thought it was the younger players that really attracted me on the weekend. And when I went back and watched a couple of the games that I didn't get to watch live on Monday, I'm talking about Matt Rau for the Gold Coast Suns. His start to the year has been phenomenal. Caleb Sarong changed the game for Fremantle against Brisbane on Sunday. Connor Rozee is probably already in that star category. I include Tom Green from the Giants in that, even Isaac Heaney. Question to both of you is, are we starting to see the next breed of genuine A-grade stars coming through?
Yes, and I absolutely love it. And it probably only happens, once every decade or so, because you look at the Dangerfields, the Selwoods, the Pendlebury's, even Mark Murphy's, Luke Shuey's that have recently retired. These are the guys that you speak about from the start of their career for a good decade in. Yep. As you mentioned, the guys that we're now seeing start the first 2 weeks with a bang are these young guns that are just starting to launch. But Matty Rau, you can't go past him. 46 contested possessions in 2 weeks, 29 clearances. Yep. What the actual? but look, Green as well, Tom Green, this is going to be a young man who's going to be such a superstar of this GWS side for many, many years to come. So it's exciting. It's exciting because, as I said, we've spoken so much about the other guys, the older guys, which have dominated for so long. But I'm with you, Hev. You're seeing this young wave come through, and we're going to be following these careers for the next decade itself.
It is exciting. And there's a couple of stories, obviously, within that. I loved Isaac Heaney's move to the midfield. He's a goal-kicking midfielder that has changed from being just a pure forward to being a midfielder that can go forward and kick goals.
And he has to stay there now, doesn't he? Even with the guys that are coming
Parker
back.
Coming back in. Yeah.
Adams coming back in. Absolutely.
It's going to be interesting there. Love Matty Rau's story back from injury. Two brutal injuries during the first part of his career. The scary part for me is the Port Adelaide midfield going forward.
Yep.
You've got Rosie, Butters and Horn Francis in there. That three should be sending absolute shivers through the competition because they're going to play against them for the next 10 years. And I believe Horn Francis can go forward, kick goal. Well, all three of them can go forward and kick goals. And as a midfield, if Port Adelaide can keep them together, they have three genuine All-Australian superstars in the midfield.
And that's where it's so special, isn't it, at Port Adelaide in particular. You've got Travis Boak playing his 350th game this weekend. I think he's only the 23rd or 24th player in history to reach that milestone. So you look at him being such a soldier of this football club for so long, such a long period of time, but then you've got those young bulls that you just mentioned that are just starting to launch. It's an exciting time.
What's that like as well? So when you're one of the more established or senior players on the list, and I think about, say, maybe when Joe Danaher arrived at Essendon, Zaka, or Abs, I think even like a young Ebony Marinoff or something like that on the Crows list, when you're kind of seeing something special and you're just seeing little glimpses week in, week out, but you're seeing more of them. What's that like for the playing group?
Yeah, well, we had the fortunate enough to see Joey since he was probably 12 years old. He was always around the footy club, and you could tell this kid was a prodigy in the waiting, and you couldn't wait to be able to play with him coming through. And every now and then there are a few players like that. And I guess as a senior player, yeah, you just can't wait to get them on your list because you know the impact they're going to have on your footy club, not just on the field, but actually at the footy club at the time. And you want to be able to play with them for 10, 15 years because they are going to be a key to your success. And obviously Joey didn't work out, but there are other players along the way that you just see them as youngsters or 18-year-olds. And first of all, you hope the footy club drafts them. I can get them on the list because everyone knows now with under-18s, people know in the draft talk and all that. It's on social media and all that. So you see these players and kids growing up. But then once they arrive in your footy club, you just cannot wait to play with them.
Exactly the same with Ebony Marinoff. That's a perfect example. You know, we watched her grow up from a 14, 15-year-old starting to play against the women in the SANFL women's competition. Back then, there was the 8 teams in the AFLW state-based draft, so we knew that Noffy was going to go to the Crows. There was no question about that. But she was just this big energizer bunny that was just waiting to launch. So, yes, over those first few years, you see them grow into their bodies, the amount of time that they put into the strength and conditioning aspect to their games. And now, you know, what is she, 23?
23, 24?
Yeah, 23. And she is a genuine superstar of the competition. So it's pretty special when you see them grow before your eyes.
We're talking about the games that we're most looking forward to on the weekend. Abs Collingwood.
Oh, yeah.
St Kilda, Thursday night. I'll be there. You'll be there. This is a big one. I know it's only round two in the season, but for Collingwood in particular, this is a really, really big game.
It certainly is. And the pressure has been on the Pies, hasn't it? Everything was fairly rosy for them last year, but they went up to the Gabba last year at 3-0, did not drop a game. And then that set up that excellent clash up there. Of course, Brisbane got the win at home. But this year, if they do not win this game, round two against the Saints tomorrow, they are staring down the barrel of a 0-3 start. Go up to the Gabba. Lions are 0-2. No reigning premier has ever defended the flag from a 0-2 start. And the Cats, the perfect example, the most recent example, they didn't even make the finals in 2023. So for the Pies, as I said, everything was pretty rosy early. They went, what was it, 18 wins, 5 losses, and then went bang, bang, bang through a final series to be our premier. But the pressure comes quickly, doesn't it? At a 0-2 start, yes, it's only a small sample of what's to come for the rest of the season. But as well, just looking at Craig McRae on the boundary on Friday night, I've never seen him look nervous or stressed or under the pump. And I certainly saw that in his eyes on Friday night.
It's a different story for mine from Brisbane to Collingwood. Brisbane have looked the absolute best in quarters so far this year, whereas Collingwood haven't looked anywhere near their best in any quarter this year, and they look off. They look like the defense looks in a little bit of, oh, you take my man, I'll take your, and they're kind of getting caught in between. Their midfield hasn't been firing, so they're more of a story than Brisbane at the moment, just because they haven't actually hit their best, whereas Brisbane have lost games they've been up in by more than 5 goals in both games, which they shouldn't have lost. But Collingwood right now, the biggest story, into they just look absolutely off from where they were last year.
Do you think, Abs, that part of Craig McRae's body language that we saw is because he's seeing things that he didn't see last year?
Absolutely. And it's body language from the players as well. We're not used to seeing this from the Collingwood Football Club. It's the basic skill errors. So Sydney last week, they kicked 47 points from forward half turnovers. Yep. We do not see that from this Collingwood side. Look, that was the most this season, the third most conceded under Craig McRae. And that 47 points was from 27 turnovers. So it's quite remarkable. They're turning the ball over in their back half. Yep. We do not see that. We normally see this Collingwood side create a turnover and then bang, they've gone straight past you quick as a flash. They're one of the best, I guess, transition sides in the competition. But we're not seeing that in the first two weeks.
So is it just about and this is, you know, The players can say all they like, oh, we're not listening to outside noise. Everyone hears outside noise. And we spoke about this last week on the show, that it's impossible when you've got friends asking you about it and family asking you about it. And you go down the shop to get a coffee and the bloke behind the counter wants to talk about it. Do the players, or could they potentially kind of get together and just say, look, let's just swim between the flags and get back to the basics this week?
Oh, I think it's great when you always have a players-only meeting. Not sure whether the coaches are like that at certain times.
Is that at a pub somewhere, by the way?
Yeah. Well, Carlton last year, perfectly.
That's what I was going to say. That was a crisis meeting, wasn't it?
Exactly.
And then after that, look at what they did.
Exactly. So it can really fortify the group and you put some things on the table, because you never know. None of us know inside the Collingwood walls at the moment, but They won a flag last year. We don't know, but there could be a few egos or blokes that have just started the season a little bit slower than what they otherwise would have with the hunger. And maybe sometimes in a room that a few blokes point a few fingers and then there's some truths said and the boys actually get on and play some really good footy together and the connection actually grows. That, who knows if that's happening with Collingwood at the moment, but I feel like we had a few of them in Essendon sometimes when we went through some slumps with the footy club, and you do find it really helps the group. But whether they're at that point right now, I don't know. It still is only 2 weeks into the season. I feel like if they have a bad game against St Kilda this week, then that'll probably definitely happen. But I think they'll have a pretty good win tomorrow night.
We can't really talk about this in today's day and age, but they did. They used to be just the lock-in, didn't they? Shove every player inside a box of four walls, lock it shut, chuck a slab in there and let them go at it, work it out, and then see if they can, I guess, rejuvenate their season.
What happens Thursday for mine will be fascinating to watch, because Craig McRae seems very cool with, and I heard him on the Howie games, that, you know, it's not about the serious nature of what it used to be. And he told a story about Robert Walls back in the day. He said, "I knew you blokes were going to lose from your attitude when you got on the bus the day before you travelled down from Brisbane." And you think about that prelim where they were all laughing and joking as they were coming out the tunnel. So he does seem like he's happy to kind of let the guys problem solve this themselves. Yeah. So in many respects, it feels like it is on them tomorrow night to sort it out.
It's funny you mention that. So throughout my career, I had coaches that would really get affected by what happened the day before the game or the morning of, or how you were acting in the change room before the game. And then John Worswell, when he came in and coached, he said, it was a line that resonated with me the rest of my career. Once that ball is bounced, it does not matter what happened the day before, the week before, the 3 minutes before the bounce. Once that ball is thrown up, you are ready to play AFL footy, or you should be ready to play AFL footy. And regardless of whether a player in the change room was laughing before the game, you should be able to switch on in that moment and play footy, because the person next to you doesn't care what happened, whether you had the best preparation that week or whether you had the worst. And that always stuck with me there, because players do this day and age, and it relaxed over my whole career. From the start, where it was a very serious environment in the change room, to then later on, boys are playing cricket in there, playing whatever they, like guys having a sleep or a little visualization in the corner of the room. Everything changed to more individual based. And once that ball bounced, then it's just you play footy with the team.
Absolutely. And as you just touched on, like everybody is different in the way that they approach it. Some are intense and up and about and loud and in your face, whereas some do like to put their headphones on and have a little bit of a nap, have a 20-minute power nap, and that's how they prepare. So, it's interesting inside the four walls how you do see everybody approach it differently.
Pies certainly got their struggles at the moment. Nick Dacos doesn't have struggles.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
Game number 50 this weekend. It does feel like it's come around very, very quickly.
Certainly does. And my question to both of you is this the best, the whole-rounded 50 games that we've seen from a youngster? He's in his third season, right? He's a premiership player. He was a rising star. He's an All-Australian. Arguably, he would have been a Brownlow medalist last year if he did not miss the last month of football with that knee injury. So he still finished third, which is quite remarkable in itself. But is this the best 50 games that we have seen from a player in the last 20 or 30 years?
It's a hard one, because you can kind of get caught up in recency bias in that. I just remember flashes of a kid watching Juddy, just as you were talking about Dacos then, that just Juddy kicking goals from the boundary.
He won the Brownlow in his third year, didn't he?
In his third year. So you can kind of get caught up in Nick, which is, he's had an unbelievable first 50 games. But I mean, there are players that burst, when I say players, there's one, like you said, one or two every 10, 15, 20 years that burst on the scene and have an impact, like him, Joel Selwood, in his first couple of years, won a couple of flags.
Not bad.
Just like that, a few flags.
But my question to you is, where's his best position right now for Collingwood? Because we just spoke about their struggles in defence and moving the ball. Do they need to move him back permanently again on halfback just to get them going again?
Well, Finn McRae was good when he came on for Ash Johnson as a substitute last week. So do you just give him the nod from the opening bounce and then potentially put Nick back on the halfback just so that he can run and give them some drive out of defence? Because we haven't seen that in the first 2 weeks. So look, it's something to look at. We even saw Jordy Degoe went forward as well when Ash Johnson came off. So Fly McRae, he certainly had to move the magnets around to try and inject some energy into the group. But as much as you do want your best players around the football, and Nick Dacos is showing that in the first 2 weeks, I think his performances have gone, you know, under because of what Collingwood have produced in terms of the losses. But he might be what they need coming out of halfback.
It's going to be a big, big start to the round. Collingwood and St Kilda tomorrow night. Spud's game as well, which is fantastic. It's a wonderful cause and very much looking forward to that. On the other side of this, we're still going to talk about the length of the season. We touched on this last week, Abs, with Jonesy, and we want to pick this up again because it just kind of feels as if this conversation is not going away. And the AFL 2 hamstrung by tradition. That is all coming up on Footy Talk. If you have a question for us, of course, you can hit us up on Instagram at @footytalk_pod or on TikTok at @footytalkpod. Good to have you with us on Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk. If you're listening on Spotify, then of course hit the bell and you'll be notified when we drop a new episode each and every day. David Zaharakis, Abby Holmes and Jack Heverin. It's Wednesday where we do things a little differently. We look at it from the player's point of view and dive into some of the biggest issues in the game right now. It is F1 season at the moment, Zaka, which I know excites you very much because I'm sure there's probably an appearance or two at some point on the weekend. Is that correct?
We love that, don't we?
Yeah. I hosted an event yesterday and guess who was front and center? This guy.
So yeah. Hang on. You hosted and you were a guest?
Yes. Yep.
So, I just threw myself in the ring there.
You
sorry,
threw yourself under the bus there. Well done.
Unbelievable. I mean, to be fair, we're so used to Abby hosting things now exactly, that it's just like it's another day, another dollar, really. But Lewis Hamilton caught your attention in terms of the way that he's gone about picking his team.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the AFL and the F1 this week, there's a theme around which I've looked at is Lewis Hamilton already signed with Ferrari for next season. Now, I want to bring back up the discussion of we've already had mid-season draft. There's already talk about mid-season trade period. I want to bring back up the discussion of players out of contract signing with clubs during the season. Now, traditionalists straight away obviously go to no. Is the AFL hamstrung by traditionalists and costing absolute juicy headlines throughout the year? Where I know there's a lot to talk about in footy, as there is, but if you have a player signing with another team, could be a rival team, or there could be talk about it. Like there's already talk with Clayton Oliver now, with Geelong, and there's a few other players like that. If a player signs with another club or is close to it, I think it creates great headlines for the AFL.
It creates headlines, yes, but I think it would create headaches as well. You look at what we saw last weekend, right? James Harms gets reported suspended for a week for headbutting Stephen May, his great mate and ex-teammate. I don't think we could see it. I do not think we could see it. Imagine if Clayton Oliver, right, mid-season, gets announced that he's going to Geelong or Adelaide for season 2025. I think you immediately not lose respect, but lose the trust of the football club. You lose the trust of your teammates, the coaches. You want to know that the people that are in your football club are committed to you long-term. They're not just looking to the end of the year. But that's the kind of people that you want around your club.
And this is my issue with it, that you see Lewis Hamilton comes out and he signs and he said, I'm 100% committed to Mercedes this year to drive the best I can. Rugby league players do it. Why do we have that mindset in the AFL that we are so turned off the idea that we think a player or we think the fans will turn on him or a player won't perform the best when other sports do it well?
I think when we're looking at the F1 sport, it's more individual than it is team. Right. I know that you understand, you know, Lewis Hamilton has an amazing team around him. You look at tennis, you look at golf, all of these incredible individual athletes that go out and do their business. Yes, they have teams around them. But at the end of the day, on race day, it comes down to one person and it comes down to them doing well. When it comes to football, you've got an entire team behind you that needs you to be 100% focused on your football club.
Let's play this scenario out then, because it's the players' show. Yep. Let's imagine that you two are still playing and a teammate who is a friend and can confidently confide in you grabs you and says, hey, can I have a word for a minute? Look, I just want to give you the heads up. It can't come out, but I've actually signed next year to go somewhere else. What would you think?
Well, for me, I immediately go to free agency and what that has created now. So when I first started to move, you had to get traded. And players it was all about the loyalty factor. Players had to stay at clubs, whatever. By the time I got to the end of my career and free agency and players signed, I know it's the end of the season, but it's way more accepted now that players do move around the AFL and some players played 3-4 clubs and there's more players that have played for 3 or 4 clubs than what I first started. So I think my personal view on this is I wouldn't care because I know that person is going to give it their absolute best throughout the season. And I would do too. If I sign it somewhere else, you're still committed to that club for that season. You're a professional, you're contracted. Not everyone would potentially.
What are you saying? I wouldn't be professional?
No, I'm not. I'm looking at you because I'm talking to you. Yeah, I'm looking at you because I'm talking to you. But
Abby's gone to nine next year, by the way.
I think in this day and age with younger generation, more liberties they want, everything now. People in society these days, it's a lot more of a selfish society. The players are making their own decisions outside of what the realm is of the AFL world. And they go, well, if I want to move to somewhere next year, I'll be able to move to it, but I'm still going to give 100% to my team now. That's my take on it.
Look, and I wouldn't like it. I think I'm all for the mid-season trade situation because there might be players that aren't necessarily part of the best 22 of a football club that will be at another one. They're chasing opportunities, put them in a different system or structure that needs them. Great, they can flourish and get the opportunities to play football games. I'm 100% on board for that. But probably not mid-season where you make the announcement that you're not going to be there next year because I think that just leaves a sour taste. Look, we're going to go back and forth on this.
I'm just going to sit here and listen.
Yeah, it just leaves a sour taste in the mouth of your teammates and the football club as a whole.
So if you were still playing, would you walk into the locker room and look at your teammate differently if they had signed?
I think so, yes.
Okay. So you'd run out with them potentially not trusting them?
The trust would still be there given you've played with them for however long, but certainly when you're looking at success moving forward, it would not be there with that person knowing that they've signed at a different football club.
I think as long as we all accept, I hear both of your points and they're both really good points.
It's a great discussion, isn't it?
It is.
But I think as long as we all accept that it's happening.
Yeah.
I don't think we can live in your point about how things have changed from when you started to when you finished, Saka. Mm. I don't think we can live in this naive world where we think, no, they won't start talking until the free agency period opens.
Yeah.
There would be conversations going on probably today as we speak right now.
And that's why we do see players holding off on making announcements of contract extensions or heading into free agency, that kind of thing, because I think they'd be nervous about what their teammates and what their football club might do in response.
I think you'd divide the locker room we're only a sample of two when we're 50-50, both of it on either side. Yep. You would divide the locker room. Half the people would love it and fans would probably love it and accept it because if they might benefit from it as well. And then other people would absolutely hate it.
Last week, Nathan Jones sat in the chair that you're sitting in right now, Zacha, and spoke about the length of the season and said, no practice games, no preseason, let's just play footy.
Into it.
Which probably didn't surprise any of us. Some 7 days on, that conversation's still very much happening. And now there's talk of potentially another round for next season. There's even been the idea thrown up of a 3-game grand final series. Where do you sit on all of this?
I would say 90% of the time in the AFL throughout my career where there's smoke, there's fire, and it eventually something happens.
It's called flying a kite.
Exactly. So I think the AFL are pushing that hard for the extra round and they want to own all the way from March to the end of September on the fixture in Australian sport. Starting early with it's still summer, March now is hotter than what December and basically January is. It's a very hard game to play as it is and then playing basically in the middle of summer is, we've seen the first couple of rounds with the dew on the quality of footy hasn't been as good as what it would be in June, in July. So that's one issue that I jumped to straight away. But I think the AFL, commercial, money, more games equals more money. I don't know what your point on that is, but
I'm with Jonesy. I think, look, as a player, you love the pre-season, the summer sweat sessions. I loved it. But if you can make it shorter, 100%.
Yeah.
And I think we saw in trial games and scratch matches, the amount of injuries, the suspensions, Jimmy Webster gone for 7 weeks. These are avoidable in the sense that the games aren't happening for points, right? But we're still seeing these incidences through injuries and reports and suspensions. So I think the players and the football clubs would probably be happy to start the season earlier if it meant players in particular, a shorter preseason first and foremost, but you're playing for something. You're not playing for injury. You're not playing for reports. But as you said as well, from a commercial point of view, the AFL, eventually you would assume they want to own a 12-month window across the AFL and AFLW. So at the moment, W starts, crosses over on the bye as well in August, runs through to December. That season's going to extend over time. If you bring the AFL forward, extend W again, you're looking at, 10, 11 months already of football.
We are, and when I first started, we are the only sport in the world that had when I first started, when it was 22 rounds, basically we had 5 months of preseason and 5 months of, of games and a two-month holiday. We were the only sport in the world that basically matched our preseason with our season. Yeah. Every sport, like soccer, they basically have a preseason for three weeks, and then the season starts back up and they own 10 months of the year. Mm. So that was the biggest thing that I found just a bit challenging. Why are we training for 5 months and then playing for 5 months? Like, why don't we make either the season longer or preseason shorter? And when I first started, October 27 was one of the dates we went back to preseason training. Now it's basically December 15 for some clubs. So that's already been shortened. So great, tick for players there that they've got a shorter preseason. But then if you add more games in, preseason gets even shorter.
It's the way it's heading, isn't it? Mm. And your point's a good one, that generally when they're out there in the media, these stories, it's the AFL are flying a kite. They're just getting a bit of a test for what people think and where it's all going to land. It's happening next year, isn't it? Don't we think?
I don't know. It kind of has to, doesn't
it? Which either next year or the year after we're going to 24 games.
The three-game grand final series, though, I'm not a fan of. Zach might think differently, but no, I like the final day in September, the top two teams winning their way through and then having it out on grand final day.
I think certain sports have certain requirements. So AFL, NFL, two of the hardest sports in the world to play. You have a one-off.
Yep.
Whereas basketball and baseball, where you need to play best of seven games because the games can go either way on any given night. Whereas the AFL, over four quarters of footy and one of the most brutal sports in the world, one-off game.
Nicely done, you two. I didn't mean to drive a wedge between you two, but it did get a little bit testy at one stage.
There always is, don't worry.
And just for clarification, Abby's not going to Channel 9 next year. Just want to put that out there before it gets written off. She's got a 15-year deal with Channel 7. She's going to be there for a long time. Good luck with the Ironman this weekend,
Thank
Zaka.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Abs, see you at the footy
tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it. This is Footy Talk, of course. If you want to get involved in the show, you can send us a message on Instagram at footytalk_pod. And tomorrow, you asked for it and it's happening. Daisy and Heater are back. Listener.